I'm going to leave effluent quality now and go to the water quality predictions. There is still some uncertainty regarding the modeling of nitrogen compounds from the cyanide breakdown and regarding the levels of ammonia which will accumulate in the attenuation pond and reclaim pond. AEM has committed to monitor and periodically remodel these. We do support this approach, and you know, we're going to learn as we go along what is actually happening. Modeling is our best guess. One of the things I would like to see as a license condition is an approved ammonia management plan, and there's examples like Diavik had to do one and other companies have them, to ensure source control, because that's really where it all starts. You want to prevent your problems. Next is Pitt Lake's water quality. We've had some discussions on what's going to happen in the pits after closure. It's predicted that there'll be a cleaner top layer of water, and the bottom layer of water will have a little more density because of the salts that come up from the groundwater. The layer between them separating is called a chemocline. So we had sought clarification of the role that groundwater inputs or discharges were going to have in this pit water quality, and how stable that layer was going to be. Was it going to break down as predicted? How is that going to affect water quality at closure? We did get clarification on the inputs that were used in the modeling, and those look conservative enough, but there are still questions on the stratification. I think that it's important to keep remodeling this as further groundwater data quality are available, but this can be addressed in future closure estimates. I'm sorry, in future closure updates. Just going to the groundwater monitoring. Initially, in our review, we had identified some problems with the handling of groundwater data, although we did agree that data were adequate to predict the salinity and major ion concentrations in dissolved metals. What we would like to see is a standalone groundwater monitoring plan. I think it's important that the permanent wells be robust, be installed soon, not necessarily go back where the ones that there's been problems with were, because those sites are going to be covered over anyways. And this should be planned for to happen as soon as possible to get that data. Okay, I'm going to turn the mic over to Glenn at this point.
Thank you, Anne. My name is Glenn Groskopf. I'm from Environment Canada. And I'll be talking on tailings and waste rock issues. And it's the management of these solid wastes from the mine that are going to be critical for the long-term impact of the development. And the specific issues that I'll address relate to, the fundamental underlying design components to those waste facilities, and that being the effectiveness of the cover to isolate the active zone from the reactive material. The actual segregation of material to ensure that you don't have problematic rock in that cover. And with that, I'll now go through the slides. First one is on design depth on the active zone. It's been already fairly extensively discussed, and from...
Just for a quick second.
Thank you. The design of the cover and its thickness has already been fairly extensively discussed, and our department, concurs with where the discussion is heading in terms of looking at that cover design, and as we get real data, being able to put that into the model and confirm what the thickness would be for long-term protection of the reactive material. Next slide relates to contingency planning for the waste rock piles, and that relates to the fact that should in the course of evaluation be found either to be substantially more problematic rock to deal with, or that the cover design requires significant modification, that there should be always a contingency that can be undertaken to ensure that the site can be decommissioned safely. So, for example, such actions could be a commitment that failing the proposal, waste rock could be relocated, say, into one of the pits, or cover material otherwise augmented to ensure that the material is not going to degrade and affect the environment in the long term. Excellent. Till characterization. This relates to comments that some of the material, and it's about 10% of the till, is probably acid rock, may be problematic in generating drainages that could affect water quality. And we just wanted to underscore the importance of ensuring that none of that material gets inadvertently incorporated in any of the structures where it would affect water quality. And lastly, site rock, mine rock segregation. As I indicated earlier, segregation of the material to ensure that it's properly disposed of is key and fundamental to the handling of solid waste at this mine. It's been stated that segregation of the rock would be on the basis of a sulfur content, as well as I believe the document suggests that total metal content may be required as another means to address metal leaching. The company is committed to updating and adapting its plans as it advances and as additional data is obtained. And we're certainly in agreement that is a good approach to take. However, we suggest that really you should have a segregation plan in mind, and if you don't have sufficient data, you should be quite conservative initially. And as you get greater confidence, you're able to reduce that, particularly given that many of these materials are going to be incorporated into long-term structures where the removal may be more difficult. And I guess related to that is once you have a segregation system, I think one of the other key components is routinely audited to ensure that it is working as expected. Rock units aren't always necessarily as homogeneous as first anticipated, and though certainly it's not exceptional to have rock units even within a drill core varying quite considerably in terms of their environmental character, certainly when you go then to try to extract the information to a whole mining block, it can be more challenging. And through auditing, you can confirm that your rule that you're using for segregating is working, and that as you get greater confidence, you can then have greater time between those audits as you're within the same rock units. And that, I guess, concludes my part of the presentation. Thank you.
There. Okay, so I'm going to switch gears now. It's Ann Wilson again. To waste management. Just a couple of topics here. We're going to look at the incineration, compliance with the Canada-wide standards in connection with that, and land farm operations. Okay, I'll start out by saying we appreciate AEM's cooperative approach to implementing the best technology for incineration, and we looked at the incinerator specs yesterday, and there's further work being done based on that. Their plans are to incinerate used petroleum products, food waste, and sewage treatment sludge until it can go to the tailings facility. And they are looking at getting a dual chamber high temperature incinerator and ensuring that it has enough capacity for the camp, including redundancy. They've committed to stack testing to ensure that there is compliance with the Canada-wide standards. And they initially had stated that incinerator ash will be disposed of by spreading within the landfill following some testing for compliance with environmental guidelines that the GN has.